Angie's List is now Angie, and we've heard a lot of theories about why.
I thought it was an eco move. Fewer words, less paper.
No, it was so you could say it faster.
No, it's to be more iconic.
Must be a tech thing.
But those aren't quite right. It's because now you can compare upfront prices, book a service instantly, and even get your project handled from start to finish.
Sounds easy.
It is, and it makes us so much more than just a list. Get started at Angie.com. That's A-N-G-I. Or download the app today.
Welcome to the 49ers Insider Podcast on NBCSportsBayArea.com. Introducing your host, San Francisco 49ers Insider, Matt Mayoko.
49ers defensive backs coach Jeff Hafley is our guest on this edition of the 49ers Insider Podcast. We'll learn a little bit about Hafley's interesting journey to become the 49ers DB's coach. He enters his third season in that role after originally joining Chip Kelly's staff in 2016. In one of Hafley's first jobs at the University of Pittsburgh, he coached Darrell Revis, one of the all-time great cornerbacks. So we'll talk about that as well as the system he is now coaching with the 49ers and his early experiences this offseason with Richard Sherman. But first, let's answer some questions from some of our followers on Twitter. First up is at 49er fan Zach, who asks, is there one under-the-radar player that might be too good to stash on the practice squad? Well, the first person who comes to mind is Richie James. James was a seventh-round draft pick from Middle Tennessee State. This is a guy that appears to be very tough, and he looked good during the offseason program. And the 49ers are going to have a very crowded wide receiver competition. We know that Pierre Garçon, Marquise Goodwin, Trent Taylor, and Dante Pettis are locks to make the team. The 49ers usually keep six receivers, so that's four right there. Then you have Aldrick Robinson, Kendrick Bourne, Aaron Burbridge, Victor Bolden. And then what about James? If he can play well on special teams during the exhibition season, I think it'll be very difficult for the 49ers to try to sneak him through waivers. So that would be the guy that would come to mind who is an under-the-radar player that the 49ers might not be able to stash away on the practice squad. At Nevin 49ers, N-E-V-Y-N 49ers. Should we be reading anything into Reuben Foster at the will linebacker position again? Seems that they keep talking about him moving to the mic, but he always ends up in the spot where he doesn't have to make the calls. Bowman, then Coyle, now Smith, and rookie Warner. Well, yeah, I mean, what you read into it is the 49ers want Reuben Foster to play fast. Kyle Shanahan always says that Reuben Foster reminds him of the Waterboy, talking about the Adam Sandler movie where that linebacker is flying around making plays, hitting people very hard. That's the way they want Reuben Foster to play. And remember now, he didn't take part in the offseason program last year, at least not the physical part, because of the shoulder injury. This year, he remained away from the offseason program for most of it because of the legal issues that were finally sorted out in early June. So I think that the feeling is just that they want Reuben Foster out there flying around sideline to sideline making plays, and they don't want his mind cluttered with calling the signals on defense and being responsible for getting everybody lined up. They want him to worry about his job, which is to be a playmaker in the middle of that defense. At Jason Mobbs asks, can you talk about the rookies in the secondary and what the competition is looking like? Well, it's looking like a very tall group of defensive backs. The 49ers added Tarvarius Moore, a third-round pick, 6'2", from Southern Miss in the third round. DJ Reed, who isn't a tall guy, but has long arms and plays much bigger than he is. They added him in the fifth round. He's from Kansas State. And then a very physical, strong safety type, Marcel Harris from Florida, in the sixth round. In addition, they signed some undrafted rookies. Probably the headliner was Tarvarius McFadden from Florida State, a 6'2 cornerback. So the locks in that secondary, Richard Sherman, Akello Witherspoon, Jimmy Ward, Kaywan Williams, Jaquaski Tartt, and Adrian Colbert. And then you have some guys who are non-rookies who are added into that competition, including Chancellor James, who has looked very good last year during training camp as a rookie before sustaining an ACL injury. So he'll be back as safety to try to compete for a job. Greg Maben, Tyvis Powell, Don Jones, Antone Exum, and C.J. Goodwin are also guys. So, there will be some competition. There are not a whole lot of spots to be had, but you know the 49ers are looking to build depth. It's a very young defensive backfield, and there will definitely be competition for those final spots on the roster. And going back to that first question, there might be one of those guys, whether it's Tarveris McFadden, that would be a candidate who, if he shows up well in the exhibition season, even if he maybe isn't good enough at this point to make the 53-man roster, the 49ers might feel inclined to keep him around just so they don't lose him. The defensive backfield, of course, was considered a weak point last year, but I think that group is better and has more depth than probably what most people believe at this point. And that's a good segue because now we're going to talk to Jeff Hafley, the 49ers defensive backs coach, to talk about all of that stuff. So Jeff Hafley coming up right now on the 49ers Insider Podcast. All right, I'm joined now on the 49ers Insider Podcast by 49ers defensive backs coach Jeff Hafley. Jeff, welcome to the podcast, your debut on the podcast.
Yep, thanks for having me. I appreciate it.
No problem at all. So this is your third year with the 49ers. Have you adjusted? Has this East Coast guy adjusted to life on the West Coast in the Bay Area?
Yeah, I've adjusted well. My family and I, we all like it out here. People have been great. Weather's been even better. But yeah, we like it a lot. And we like the organization right now, and we're excited.
You played 4 years as wide receiver at Siena College in New York. How does a wide receiver become a defensive backs coach?
I don't know. I always thought I'd coach on the offensive side of the ball, to be honest with you. I knew I wanted to coach in college. I knew I wanted to coach for a long time. I thought I'd be an offensive coach. My first job was actually as a running backs coach, so I really thought I was going to coach the offense.
That was at what college?
That was at Worcester Polytech, Division III football. So I started there coaching the running backs. And then the following year, I went to Albany in New York as a graduate assistant, and I was coaching the defensive tackles. So somehow I went from a running back coach to a defensive line coach, not even knowing how to get in a three-point stance. So I had to pull one of the seniors and say, hey, man, come here. Teach me how to get in a stance because I got to get in front of the room pretty soon. And so I was in my room practicing a three-point stance and getting off the ball and 175 pounds trying to show a three technique what to do. It was a lot of fun.
Okay, now don't take any offense to this, but I don't see you as having a whole lot of street cred when it comes to talking to defensive tackles.
Well, you got to build
because
it.
Because of your – how tall are you?
5'10".
5'10", yeah.
On a good day. But you got to build it. I mean, would you look at me and right away think that I get a lot of street cred as a DB coach? No, well, be honest, right?
Okay.
So you got to build
point
it.
Well taken.
Got to build it.
Yeah, how do you do that? How do you go about building credibility?
I mean, you learn. In that situation, I did. I grabbed one of the senior captains and I said, "Hey man, we're going to work this out together." And I grabbed some coaches I knew and I studied it and I learned and I studied and studied and studied, so when I got in front of the room, I knew what I was talking about. And you got to go in with confidence and you got to be able to teach and you got to be able to, most importantly, you got to show the players you care about them, whatever position you coach, and you have to earn their trust. And if you do that, I think things will work out pretty good for you most of the time.
So if you're a coach, you're a coach, whether you're coaching defensive tackles, defensive backs, wide receivers.
I couldn't have said any better. If you're a coach, you're a coach. And you can learn the game. You can study the game, maybe not at a high level like this, where it's, you know, guys have been doing it for a long time and different level. But if you're a coach, you're a coach. If you can teach, you can teach. If you can relate to people, you can relate to people. If you can motivate, you can motivate. So I think from an early age, I learned that it's going to be hard. I'm going to have to learn different things. But I got a great opportunity here to start up front and move my way back, because the following year, I coached the outside linebackers. So I gradually moved back, and then suddenly...
And that's still at Albany?
Still at Albany. So I went from the defensive tackles to the outside linebackers. And then the DB coach left. So I went from being a GA. They offered me the full-time job to coach the DBs. I was like, all right, here we go again. I gotta learn. Playing wide receiver helped, but it was the same thing. But it helped me because ultimately I had to learn all three levels. And now that I'm on the back end, I see everything in front. and it was a great opportunity.
So you went from Albany to the University of Pittsburgh?
I went from Albany to Pitt.
I have to ask you a question. Did you coach any good defensive backs at Pittsburgh?
I did.
Was there anybody that we might know?
Yeah, the first corner that I was ever there with was Darrell Revis. So I thought, all right, this Division I thing is going to be pretty easy. You know, at that time, I knew Revis was special. At that level, he was special. I didn't know exactly how special he'd be in this league. Obviously, he's one of the best, in my opinion, to ever play the game, but I was like, this is going to be pretty easy. Just keep giving me guys like this and don't screw them up.
So what did you learn from Darrell Revis that you could take with you in every subsequent job teaching defensive backs?
Well,
did you even realize at the time that those lessons would be applicable for every job you got from there for?
I did. I think with him, I learned a bunch. At the time, I was a young coach, and I remember coming in and being like, Coach Rhodes, who was the defensive coordinator at the time, was like, man, look at his footwork on this, or look at his footwork on that. And Coach Rhodes was like, all right, Jeff, this guy's special. Let's let him play a little bit. And I'm big on technique, and I'm big on fundamentals, but part of me learned there too, hey, this guy can play at a high level. Don't try to change him to fit exactly what you think he should be. Just get him better. And I did my best. He was pretty good at the time. It was his junior year, so it was for one season. And then I always try to take stuff from players. I've always been big on picking players' brains and trying to learn from them. And I made this statement. I probably have learned just as much from really good players as I've learned from coaches, especially from fundamentals and techniques. I try to get in their head to see what they think and how they do things and how they see things, because they're out there seeing it more than I am. I see it on tape, but it's different. The way he played press technique always stood out with me, how patient he was at the line, how he shot his hands and how he really held his ground at the line of scrimmage. And as I watched him in the NFL, it stayed that way, and he played that way. So I got back with him later on down the road, and same thing. I picked his brain, and I learned how to coach a little bit by watching him, but I also learned some techniques and stuff from him, which was cool.
So what point did you hook up again with Darrell Revis?
In Tampa. We had him in Tampa my second
That's
year.
Right. Yeah.
So I was back with him for one more season.
Wow. So could you watch film of him when you had him and watch the progressions he made as a player to kind of help formulate your ideas of the proper progressions that a cornerback should make?
I wouldn't say that so much in the fact that I could pull up cut-ups of him and show the younger guys. Watch him stay square. Watch him shoot his hands. Watch him not cross over. Watch how he plays off man. Little things, because I've always admired the way he's played the game. And I think he played with great fundamentals and technique. So more of, hey, let's pull up a couple cut-ups of him and sit down and watch if that player fits that mold. You know what I mean? Because I believe a lot of corners play different techniques and different styles. But if a guy was a press guy who, you know, had some strength and length, he's a good guy to watch and mirror after.
And now this message.
I can't wait to spend some quality time with my son fishing this year, teaching him about casting, how to choose bait, set the hook, and how to be safe on the water by always wearing a life jacket. Save the ones you love. A message from California State Parks Division of Boating and Waterways.
Since you've come to the NFL, you've coached under Greg Schiano, who you also coached under at Rutgers.
Yep,
right? He took you to the NFL with him, with Tampa Bay. Mike Pettine,
yep.
Chip Kelly, and Kyle Shanahan.
Right.
How much carryover has there been in those defensive systems under those head coaches? And are there certain, have you had to kind of relearn for each new guy, each new coordinator?
Yeah, they've been very different. And when you first start, it's hard because it's staying up late at night studying so I can learn it well enough to teach it. But from Coach Schiano in Tampa to Mike Pettine to that whole Rex Ryan system, very different. And then back with Jim O'Neill my first year in San Francisco, it was easy because it's what we ran in Cleveland. Mm-hmm. And then now with Coach Sala, it's very different because now we're playing three deep. So I've been in different systems all along the way, which, you know, at times it's like, man, I wish I had 3 years in the same system, you know, but But now I've kind of formulated my own thoughts and my own ideas, and I think down the road it's really going to help me because I have been around some really good football coaches. Greg Schiano is one of the best defensive coaches I've been around. And then the combination of Mike Pettine and Jim O'Neill, that whole system is very complex, and there's a lot of good things you can take from it. And I mean that. There's a lot of good things. And now to learn this system that Robert had been with in Seattle and Jacksonville, it's really sound and it's really solid, and it's hard to go against for an offense. So now that I've kind of learned them and got to coach them, it's exciting because I've been exposed to a lot.
So you talk about that three deep system. I mean, you guys are in three deep.
Right.
I mean, a lot.
For sure.
What are the tenets of the of that system that you're looking for in your defensive backs?
You know, I think you look at the safety spot, your strong safety needs to be more of a bigger linebacker type, enforcer guy you want in the box. At the same time, he has to have man-to-man skills because he is going to be in man, and he is going to have to carry verticals in certain zone coverages that we have. Your middle,
that gets mostly against tight ends.
Yeah, against tight ends for the most part. But there's times if you have the right guy and you can match him up against wide receivers, it's a benefit to the defense because now they don't know, are we in man or are we in zone? So if you're fortunate to get a guy like that, that's very helpful. As far as the free safety goes, you want a guy who can, what we call, go red line to red line and really roam that back end and make plays from sideline to sideline and track inside out on the ball and get the ball carried down when things pop open. Those are his primary responsibilities. And then for your corners, you know, there's always the, everyone in this system kind of says, oh, you're a three deep corner, you're a three deep corner, but you're in a lot of man too. So you got to have man skills and you have to be able to play three deep in zone. But again, I'm not one to say there's a specific prototype player. Yeah, I mean, you'd love to have a big guy with length who can run, and that's the perfect corner for any system. If the guy can play man too, you need players who are smart, have ball skills, have speed, and can mix up play man and play zone.
So when we're talking about a three deep zone, you're basically saying you're cutting the width of the field into thirds, and each person back there has a third of the field that they're responsible for in zone coverage, correct?
Yeah, in a true deep zone, that's what you would say. But there's sometimes guys are matched up. Sometimes the safety's leaning to a certain side. But for the most part, yeah, you're dividing the field up into thirds, and corner's responsible for one, safety's responsible for the other, and corner on the backside for the final third.
So in watching Seattle over the past, whatever, 7 or 8 years, there is a person in that defense who is considered the absolute prototype cornerback. His name is Richard Sherman. What makes him the prototype for that defense?
Well, one, I think you physically have to look at what he has. He has size and length, and he can cover a lot of ground. And he has range. He can run. His ball skills, I think, are what makes him stand out because he can locate and play the ball in zone coverage, meaning with his vision on the quarterback, as well as anybody that I've ever seen. And then what you don't really realize until you get around him is how smart he is and how well he sees things and how much he studies the game. And I think that's probably where some people don't give him enough credit. It's, yeah, physically he's really talented, but how hard he works off the field and in the film room and in the meetings are probably what makes him special. And that's what I'm finally seeing now is the work he puts in the classroom, how he sees things, how he communicates. And then I haven't really seen this yet, but I've seen glimpses, how hard he prepares and he practices. And that's what I'm most excited to see when we start. He's only done individual for us, but I can already see it coming out. And that's why he's a special player.
Well, last year when you guys were implementing this system, were you showing your guys cut-ups of Richard Sherman?
Yeah, we did. We showed him some Seattle. We showed him some Jacksonville where Coach Sala was. But he's definitely the guy I tried to cut up and show clips. And, you know, now that he's here, I can pick his brain even more, which is good.
Yeah, so on the Friday before the start of free agency, Seattle makes the decision to put his name on the waiver wire or the personnel notice that they were cutting him. How involved were you in the organization's decision to go after him and go after him hard?
You know, I think in this organization right now, the cool thing is the communication is incredible. From John to Kyle to Adam to Robert down to myself, I think everybody was on the same page. And to me, that excites me the most about this organization is how everybody communicates and how everybody is on the same page. Because what outsiders don't realize is when it's not like that, it's very hard. And when it is like that, I think you have a chance to be special. So you just kind of said the example right there, and that's why I said that, is because, yeah, they asked for my opinion. You watch tape of them. You give your opinion. Sala gives his opinion. I'm sure Kyle, John, Adam, all those guys upstairs give their opinion. And then ultimately they make a decision. But I watched a lot of film on him and thought he could play at a high level, thought he played well last year, and they made the decision, and I was very excited.
Mm-hmm. And like you said, he's only been on the field in individual drills during the off-season program or during the final mini camp that you guys held here. But one of the things that I saw from the first time he stepped out there on the field that we were allowed to watch was that I don't know if there was another player out there who was more engaged than him, and he was constantly talking to the young guys in the secondary, coaching them up. What's it been like to have this kind of, in essence, you know, player coach to help you or to, you know, for you to consult with or talk with?
Oh, it's been great. I mean, on the field, it's awesome. He's so locked in where there's even times where you'll see him taking his footwork, his steps, using his technique as if he were out there, like visually doing that. Sometimes I'll see it when I'm watching the tape. He'll be on the side doing that. And then, like you said, there's other times where he's so locked in, he might see a corner do something and grab him right away and coach him up. And it's a young room. I mean, besides him, that room is really probably one of the younger DB rooms that I've ever been around. So it's been cool. Those guys have had a guy who's done it at a high level, who sees things very well, to pick his brain, just like I've been able to pick his brain. But he's been great. He's been great in the room. He's been great on the field. He's all about winning. There's no agenda with him. He wants to get back on the field, and he is going to play at a high level, and he wants to win football games. And I have a lot of respect for him.
So this offseason begins, you know, the draft comes around, and frankly, I think the national perception was that your unit, the defensive backs, was probably about the weakest or most thin unit on this team. Now that you've gone through the offseason program, what do you feel about this group of defensive backs that you have in your room?
Well, we kind of talked about that, and I think the whole public perception is, maybe not from you guys, but from the national media, is we are thin and that we are young and that people don't know Akello Witherspoon and they don't know Adrian Colbert and they don't know Tart and they don't know Kaywan, and we like that and we're going to feed off of that. And, you know, it's our group's not going to talk about themselves. We want to play well enough where other people start to talk about us. So each day those guys are in the room trying to do that, trying to first make our team believe it, you know, and then the rest of the league believe it. And then from there, we'll go from there. I think having Sherm helps because there's a standard in the room. He's been around one of the best DB rooms in the NFL in the last few years. And between myself and between him, because the players got to own it, right? Mm-hmm. And I keep telling them that. Like, I'm not going to stand in front of the guys and say, hey, you got to do this. Yeah, I'm going to coach them. But until it comes from them, until it truly comes from the room themselves, within themselves, I don't believe it's real. And when it becomes real and when it comes from them, then I think we have something special. And I'm starting to see a little bit of that. And what I mean by that is, how do you practice every single day? Is it going to be me out on the field calling guys out, calling the huddle between every period when it doesn't go well? No, it's got to come from them. And once it does, and I think you're starting to see that when you come to practice, the excitement, the way they're competing, the way they're finishing, I think our team's going to start to notice. And then I think the NFL, the teams we play, are going to start to notice. And then from there, we'll see what happens. But we've taken a small step.
I do want to ask you about some of the specific guys. One of the guys is Jimmy Ward. Coach Shanahan referred to him as, you know, kind of the, you know, I asked him, I think, where's his position? Where you envision him? And his answer was basically, we envision him wherever we believe he can help us. He's been a safety. He's been a nickelback. He's been a cornerback, and now this offseason, he's back to cornerback. So where is it do you see Jimmy Ward? You know, is he kind of like the sixth man? Is he the first guy off the bench of an NBA team? I mean, how do you envision Jimmy Ward being used this season?
I don't want to call him a sixth man, and I don't want to call him the first man off the bench right now. I think the best 11 guys we have are going to play, and I think he's going to compete to be one of those guys. And like we talked about earlier, I think it was necessary to put him at corner right now because it's the position he has not played for the longest period of time. And we wanted to see what he could do. And he has shown that he looks like a starting NFL corner. Mm-hmm. Now, all that being said is, you know, he can be a starting NFL nickel. We've seen it. He's proved it. And we know he can be a starting NFL free safety. So the competition in the training camp, it's going to, to me, it's going to bring the best out of everybody, out of the whole group. And I think when we sit down and talk before the first game and I see you, I think we'll have an answer. But for now, it's just, I think it's going to play out in training camp. I really do.
There's a lot of, you know, the fan base, there seems to be a lot of negativity toward Jimmy just because of the injury history. How do you view that as a coach?
I couldn't disagree more with anybody that has any negativity about Jimmy. If you ever had a chance to meet him, I think you would see that. If you ever had a chance to coach him or see how hard he practices and how hard he plays and how he puts his body on the line and he gives you everything that he has, I think you would immediately respect him. He's been injured. You can be frustrated because he's been injured. I mean, I'm sure he's frustrated that he's injured, but you have to respect him because how hard he's worked and what he does every time he steps out on the field. So now he's got to take care of his body, and hopefully things will bounce the right way for him and he'll have a complete season. And I think when that does happen, I think what you're going to see, everybody's going to be wearing number 20 jerseys at that point.
Number 20, that's takes some getting used to.
I almost said 25.
Yeah. Your safeties, Jaquaski Tartt, the box safety, Adrian Colbert's been at free safety. How do you feel about those guys and their potential?
I think they've both got better. I think Tartt's gotten better every single year since he's been here. I think he's a really good fit in that position for us, being able to play in the box, cover. He has so much versatility to him. He can go back and play deep as well, which he's shown. We've put him at free safety. And then Colbert, you know, didn't play very much last year, played the half of the season. And he's taken some big steps like we talked about too. He's starting to understand things more and more. But it's the way those guys practice which has to excite you. I mean, every single day.
And something the fans don't see.
No, they don't see. And I wish they could. I wish they could just see a walkthrough because they wouldn't know it's a walkthrough with those two. They'd be like, what are these guys doing? I mean, they're sprinting to the ball. They're bending. They're getting their hands on blocks. They're going through the motions. I mean, there's times when Colbert will wear his helmet out to a walkthrough and we're not even supposed to be wearing helmets. I'd be like, AC, what are you doing?
Oh, there might be a violation coming.
Yeah, or there's, you know, there's times when it's like, AC, you're not practicing today because you have the day off because maybe your ankle hurt, and he'll come out in a full helmet and uniform. Like, what are you doing?
Yeah.
I mean, just he loves football and he loves being out there.
Akella Witherspoon looks like he's taking quite a leap in year two, just this off-season program.
Yeah, confidence. I think that's the biggest thing for him. I think he believes he can do it and do it at a high level, and he loves getting better every day, and he's another one of those guys. I mean, he studies it, and that's really cool to see. And his whole body's changed. If you threw on tape from last OTAs and watched this year's, just the way he stands and looks, he's thicker, he's bigger, and there's an extra little bounce in his step now. He's having fun out there. That's what's fun about that group right now. No one knows about us, but those guys are going to, every day they're going to put their helmets on, they're going to work.
K'Wan Williams is a guy you had in Cleveland and, you know, kind of left there under kind of weird circumstances, but you guys pounced on him. What do you like about K'Wan?
Well, K'Wan, I actually recruited out of high school. I offered him when I was at Pitt and he was at coming out in New Jersey. We offered him and he committed to me at Pitt. So I coached him for 1 year in college and then I left to go ultimately to the NFL. And then actually he wasn't drafted, so we took him as a undrafted free agent. And he started for us year one. And I've always loved the way the guy plays the game. I'm a big K'Wan Williams fan, not just the way he plays. As a person, he's an awesome guy. He works hard. And then as soon as, you know, that whole deal in Cleveland happened, when I was able to legally, you know, we reached out to each other. And I said, Coach, we got to get this guy. I thought at the time in Cleveland, he was one of the best nickels in the NFL. And I think he's going to prove that again.
You guys did add some guys, some intriguing guys in the draft and in rookie free agency. Tarvarius Moore, speedster from Southern Miss in the third round. DJ Reed, very versatile, tough-minded guy from Bakersfield, from Kansas State in the fifth round. And then another intriguing guy, undrafted rookie, Tarvarius McFadden, forgot to mention Marcel Harris as well, strong safety type. What do you think about this new these young guys who are coming in? Are they hungry? Can they make an impact? What anything stand out from those guys that you've seen during this offseason program?
Yeah, the biggest thing is they're fitting in well with who we have right now. They have that same mindset, that same we're going to go to work every single day. And they're hungry, like you said, and they're all bought in, the learning and becoming pros, smart, tough, reliable guys, which is so important to us. And a lot of those guys have gotten a ton of reps just because our depth and some of our injuries right now, and they've gotten better. I mean, I'm very excited about them. Training camp, preseason games, I'm excited about that group, and I love the way they come to work every day, and that excites me the most because it gives us a chance with them.
Well, your off-season program, official off-season program, wrapped up in mid-June. What does a coach do between that time, mid-June, and the start of training camp in late July?
Hang out with my family, spend time with my wife and my daughter. We have one on the way, so I'll be helping out my wife, do everything I can do.
When's your child?
October 9th, so hopefully we'll have a home game and be somewhere where I can be. But I'll hang out with my family as much as I can. Because as you guys know, once the season starts, that doesn't happen very often. So I'll be around them. I'm going to stay on the West Coast, kind of go up and down the coast a little bit, see some different places, just kind of recharge and get ready to go. I mean, I'll be honest with you. This is one of the first going into an off season where I'll be honest with you. I'm not like totally worn out. There's so much excitement. I love the guys I coach where, you know, I don't necessarily need to take all this time off. I know I'm going to because I know when November, December come, I'll probably be 20 pounds lighter and my eyes will be halfway shut. But
and maybe January too.
Yep. You got that right.
All right. Well, hey, Jeff, thank you very much for joining me on the 49ers Insider Podcast. It's always a pleasure to talk to you and wish you a very good time off before the grind begins in late July.
I appreciate you having me on. Thanks a lot.
You've been listening to the 49ers Insider Podcast. If you haven't already, please visit Apple Podcasts or Google Play to subscribe, and please give us a rating and a review. You can follow us on Instagram, Twitter, and Facebook at NBCS Authentic. We'll be back next week with another great edition of the 49ers Insider Podcast. Thank you for listening.
The 49ers Insider Podcast on NBC Sports Bay Area.com.